Media Masters with Paul Blanchard.
Welcome to Media Masters, a series of one-to-one interviews with people at the top of the media game. Today I'm here at BBC New Broadcasting House and joined by Paul Royal, editor of the BBC's 6 o'clock news and 10 o'clock news. After beginning his career in newspapers, he joined the Beeb in 1997 as part of the original News 24 team and later moved to BBC Breakfast, where he was appointed deputy editor in 2004. In 2007, Paul left his role to join the BBC's flagship news team, taking the reins as editor 6 years later. In his 5 years in the editor's chair, he has overseen two general elections, the Scottish referendum, Brexit, and the election of Donald Trump. Paul, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
So, Paul, a busy 5 years then.
It's been an amazingly busy 5 years, an extraordinary 5 years. And I remember when I was given the job, which was a huge privilege to become editor of the BBC's 6 and 10 o'clock news, the, as you said, flagship programmes and the front page of BBC News. And I remember at the time thinking the one anxiety I had was taking the programmes through a general election, because there's in many ways nothing more important for the BBC and BBC News than getting it right during a general election. So having gone through two general elections, a Scottish referendum, an EU referendum, and things like the election of Donald Trump, that wasn't quite what I was expecting at the beginning when I got the job.
And the sheer busyness of what you've had to cram in to this 5 years. I mean, presumably when you took the reins, you didn't expect there to be this much news.
It's been a slow build. And of course, yeah, we never expected this much news. And everyone who works in the industry probably can't believe how much has happened. In a way, it peaked last year and the sort of the first half of 2017 in many respects, where we just had a succession of a very major and quite often distressing and traumatic stories. But it peaks probably last year. But for example, when we had the snap general election, that happened after Easter. And I remember I'd been off for a week having an Easter holiday, probably like a lot of people. And then it was my first day back in the office after a week off. And then I got a text saying there was going to be an announcement in Downing Street at 11 o'clock. And here we go, we're off on a general election campaign, which is no minor feat for any newsroom.
And what's your first thought when something like that happens? Is it one of editorial challenge or is it logistics? Like, who are you going to send out there? You're already starting to think of how are you going to put that on air?
It's everything, and that is the challenge of television news in many respects, which is a story can happen and you recognise it's a story you're going to have to cover, but at the same time you're thinking, how are we going to do it? Because the movement of people and resources and kit to get to the right place is a logistical challenge and a job in itself. So the two things are running concurrently because we have to move people and resources to stories, whether it's Istanbul or whether it's Nice. At the same time, we've got to be thinking about the editorials as well.
Could you talk us through a typical day? How do you actually put, would you call it an episode or a bulletin still of the 10 o'clock news?
Or a programme?
Yeah. Programme would be even better.
So I'm editor of the 6 o'clock news and I'm editor of the 10 o'clock news. And they are the two biggest TV news programmes in the country. And so they're busy days. If you like busy days and if you like long days, then you'll like my days. Anyone who works in daily news is used to the news cycle and the stamina that is required, particularly over the last few years. And so my day begins, like a lot of people, quite early, 6 o'clock in the morning, listening to the Today programme, getting ready for work, coming in for work, newspapers, news letters that are posted on social media and so on. We have our first main news meeting of the morning at BBC News at 9 o'clock in the morning. But before that, I've been talking to my team, to my what we call output editors or programme editors, who are going to be responsible either for that day's edition of the 6 o'clock news or the 10 o'clock news. So a nice period is sort of between 8 and 9 o'clock in the morning, because you're reading things, you're discussing things, you're getting a feel for the shape of the day. And then there are programme meetings in the morning. There's a main BBC News meeting at 9 o'clock, which you can imagine there's a lot of stakeholders involved in that. And there's a lot of ideas and a lot of input and a lot of stories and a lot of possibilities that come out of that meeting. And then after that, I'm into my programme meetings, a 6 o'clock news meeting, to sort of decide and dictate the shape of the programme, and then a bit later in the morning, the 10 o'clock meeting, which again is doing the same job in terms of what stories are we going to cover, whereas our emphasis is going to be on you know, that particular day.
And do you have a kind of typical 6 o'clock news programme schedule in mind that differentiates it from the 10? Do they have different tones, and how does that manifest itself?
Yeah, we do, in the sense that the 6 o'clock news points more in a domestic news direction, and it has a particular remit to cover the nations and regions of the UK. And so with the 6 o'clock news, if there's what you might call a discretionary choice over a story, maybe not a sort of core must-do news story of the day, but a discretionary choice, and it's a choice between a domestic and a global story, it would tilt in a domestic direction. Similarly, the commissioning we would do for the 6 o'clock news would much more point in a domestic news direction. And that's so that we make sure we have a mainstream peak time BBC One news programme that really feels like it covers the whole of the UK. The 10 o'clock news points more in a global direction. These are not huge differences, but again, if there was perhaps a discretionary choice over a story, it might point in a global news direction. And again, that's so BBC News and our peak time programmes, by the end of the day, you should have a full sense of what's happening at home and abroad, and getting a real sense of the global agenda as well as the UK news agenda.
What's viewers' preferences these days? Is it to stick on News Channel and have rolling news on? Or, I mean, I have news at 10. I often get in from work sort of half 10, 11 o'clock, but I see Series Link news at 10, so I always watch it when I get in. You know, it is literally appointment to view television. Is that on the way out, though, or is that something that you think will run alongside rolling news?
I think there's a number of answers to that. For a long time, when I joined the BBC 20 years ago, when the News Channel first started, there were prophecies of the end of appointment to view bulletins, and there have been at various points since then. It's really interesting what's going on now, in the sense that the 6 o'clock news, its audience has held steady over the last few years. It averages about 4.7 million viewers on any given day.
It's an incredible number.
It's a big number
in this TV landscape with the number of channels.
So it's kind of rock solid in that respect, and it's always, well, both the programmes, the 10 and the 6, are always top five BBC One programmes on any given day. And the 6 has remained solid. The 10 has seen, is still averaging up just under 4 million viewers on any given day. They're still massive programmes. They are still figures that you know, everyone would really want to have attached to their news product. The difference there, which we can all see through the way people behave and the way we behave, is it's a really competitive broadcast space, in the sense, you know, we're up against a very competitive rival in ITV News. And also, as we know, it's a catch-up time. It's a plus one time, and it's also a time when people are going on social media and sort of doing other things. So that is a more competitive landscape. But both the programmes combined, the programmes are reaching more than 20 million people in the UK every week. On any given day, they're reaching more than 10 million people. One in three adults see a bit of the 10 o'clock news every week. So they are still massive programmes, but we're in a competitive space within the TV news and the television market, and also, of course, now within the digital and catch-up market.
So going back to your typical day, you're coming in at 9 a.m. Are you still here when Hugh's on air at 10 p.m, or do you watch from home? Do you put the program to bed and then at 7 o'clock you go home? I presumably you have a personal life.
Yeah, I try to. You can ask my wife about that. It varies. Big days, big programs, complicated days, complicated stories, I'll be here all the way through. But you're right, I've got a very experienced, very talented team who all know what they're doing, and on a personal level, you can't physically do 18-hour days forever. You can't do that. And obviously, I edit the programmes and I'm the editor, but the programme editors, the people who are outputting the programme, they're having a big say and influence in what we're doing, and they're a very talented team, and you know, they need their own space as well to do their thing.
I suppose that the question that a lot of viewers ask is, what to what extent is Hugh's personal involvement in putting the programme together? I imagine that he isn't just reading the auto cue, but you know, he isn't the editor, he isn't one of the correspondents. What? How does it work in terms of the presenter and their involvement putting the show together?
That's the question that anyone I meet in the street always asks. You know, do the presenters write their own scripts? And I'm happily able to inform them that yes, they write their own scripts. And in the case of Hugh, but all our presenters, he's a massive part of the editorial shape and drive of the programme. He's writing everything in terms of the two ways, the interviews, the questions, the top lines of the stories. All our presenters are, you know, heavily involved in that. And also you need that editorial assistance. It's, we're a team who are trying to get the best programmes together, and the presenters are a huge part of that, because in a sense they can be one step removed from the immediate production process, and they see things and hear things that perhaps we don't see. And then particularly in the final hour, if things are moving and there's breaking news, then they're fundamental, because ultimately if a story's happening just as you're going on air, you're going to have to expect them to deliver that story and do that story in a slightly more fluid, open way than you normally would if you've pre-written everything and got it all bolted down with an hour to go.
Do you have a kind of review meeting after you've been on air? Because we had Neil Thompson on the podcast recently, the editor of Good Morning Britain, and he was saying that they're very big on, as immediately they come off air, everyone sits down and they have a brutally honest nitpick where everyone says what went right and what went wrong.
Yes. Yeah, we have what we call debriefs after the 6 and after the 10. And I suppose my approach is, if there's something we really need to look into a bit more or have a deeper discussion about, I probably wouldn't do that in the debrief, in the sense that you might allude to it. But of course, if there are things which haven't worked out or things we could have done better or we've made a mistake, we investigate that and look into that. I mean, thankfully, in touch wood, generally the programmes go well. Generally, we're happy. I think we've got successful products and programs. And so quite often we might be talking about something quite small and incremental that we wish we had done, as opposed to something which, you know, was fundamental to the program.
I mean, just before we started to record the podcast, you very kindly showed us through the computerized running order system that you have. And one of the things that I noticed about tonight's news at 10 is just how planned down to the absolute second, like Laura Koonsberg will have 72 seconds on something. How does that work in terms of the way that the news evolves during the day? Because you might have your meeting at 9 a.m, but what happens if the president, Donald Trump, says something at 2 o'clock in the afternoon? Because he will. You know, to what extent do you have to throw out the plans all the time? And how often does that happen when you're on air as well, when you've got a very meticulously planned programme and then something happens and you think, well, I've got to create 4 minutes for this new thing?
Well, you've put your finger on, particularly for daily news and daily television news, you've put your finger on one of the big challenges, in the sense that both the programmes, they're part of the BBC One peak time schedule. The 10 o'clock news comes after MasterChef and The Bodyguard and The Apprentice. So they need to be polished. They need to have high production values. Yep. The audience expects a certain level from BBC One during that period.
Well, they've seen their news readers on The Bodyguard in fiction, and they want to see the same people read them the actual news immediately afterwards.
At the same time, you've got to be responsive, and you've got to be flexible, and you've got to be and that's part of my job, in the sense that the output editors are very close to the running order and the programme, and rightly so. They know everything that's going in every piece in the programme, and they're driving that all through the day. And part of my job, who can stand one step behind them, is to look at the running and say, actually, you know, we haven't moved with the day's agenda. We're still where we thought we were going to be at 8:30 this morning, and actually quite a lot has changed since then. And that there's a real art to getting that right, and sometimes you don't. The new twist in all of that is, of course, digital news and digital media, in the sense that people have consumed things by lunchtime or early afternoon, that 10 years ago they've read things, they've looked at videos that maybe 10 years ago they wouldn't have seen. They would be waiting for the 6 o'clock news or waiting for the 10 o'clock news. And so again, that's a new
They almost know the news before.
And that's, yeah, and that's something that's something that we have to sort of now grapple with as well. And so I think we generally get it right in the sense of the considered rundown of the day, but we're also a reactive programme. And if things are happening quite close to air and we think they're worthy of coverage, we'll do it.
And on a typical day, how much of the kind of ingredients are almost pre-planned or predestined insofar as when Parliament's sitting, you know that someone, a politician is going to say something, so Laura's going to be stood outside either Downing Street or Labour Party HQ for 70 seconds, or maybe there's a package and she's going to be in the studio with Hugh. How much of it can you kind of almost put together on any typical day in terms of the ingredients?
I mean, again, there's a bit of a science to that, but it's not an exact science in the sense that you can be too pre-planned and then that gets in the way of getting the news on. At the same time, to deliver impact journalism, to go deeper into stories, to do more complicated stories or to do a big investigation abroad or to do some in-depth coverage of the Rohingya crisis or what's happening in Syria, that clearly requires planning and requires commitment from the programmes in terms of putting space in the programme to deliver these stories. So again, you don't want to be overset, but at the same time, quite often those pieces that you've spent a bit more time and resource with can be the pieces which the audience remembers for a long time.
How have the 6 and 10 changed over your term as editor? Because as we said earlier, so much has happened that there's a risk that you're that busy putting the news together and working in it to not have enough time to work on the programmes and evolve them in the direction that you want. How does that work?
Yeah, we've done a number of things over the last 5 years, and sort of in no particular order. One of the things, a very practical thing, is we made the 10 o'clock news longer. There was a sort of strange thing that it was the shortest bulletin of all the BBC One bulletins, and I think that was a sort of one of those historical things that had just become embedded in the listings.
I remember when the 10 o'clock news was the 9 o'clock news.
When it was the 9 o'clock news, yeah. So we made it longer. We added about 5.5 minutes to the duration of the wishes to the programme, which is quite a lot. You know, we added about another 20%. And we sort of hoped that the audience would buy into staying up a bit longer. The reasons behind that were, we were all already getting that sense of we're living in a bigger, more complicated, politically, socially dynamic period, and we just needed a bit more space.
To reflect
and to explain and tell it all. There was sort of a lot going on. And then also some of our foreign and domestic reporting where we were going to look a bit deeper and spend a bit longer looking at an issue or a subject. I wanted to sort of devote a bit more time to those pieces and vary the mix between, say, a 2-2.5 minute on-the-day news story, which the audience wants and the audience should get. But at the same time, if we want to have a proper look at a big issue in the UK, maybe we're going to give that 4 or 5 minutes and really feel like we understand what's happening in the housing sector in the UK, or why has spice suddenly become such a problem in some of the cities around the UK, or again, in-depth foreign reporting from the Rohingya crisis or from the Middle East. And so there was a couple of practical things there. There was also broadening the range of people who were participating in the programmes. And so we've started to use some of the BBC's bilingual correspondents much more. They're excellent correspondents. They understand quite often from the country they're reporting from. And if they're in the country when a story's happening, again, this is partly a reaction to the digital world in the sense that if a story now breaks somewhere in the world, you can start listening to someone or following someone or watching a video stream pretty instantly. You don't need to wait for us to fly someone there from London and sort of start picking up the story, maybe the next day. And so it's partly in response to that. And it was partly also just to broaden the breadth and range of what we were doing on the programmes. And that's delivered real dividends in terms of some of our global coverage.
What kind of feedback do you get from your viewers? How do you stay in touch with in terms of whether they like it? You mentioned there about the extra 5 minutes. How would you have known whether that would have worked or not?
I think we'd have seen an audience drop off if it hadn't have worked. And so just purely through the audience data and the overnight data that we get, staying in touch with the audience. I mean, we have a very good audience team who work with us within news, who are always talking to the audience, getting feedback from the audience around stories, issues, trends. We have an audience log, which is a daily log, which is people who've phoned in or emailed in overnight or after the 10 o'clock news to say they like something or they don't like something. And you soon know if...
People do that, do they?
They do that, yes. They do that. Yeah, it still happens.
Is it mainly many complaints or is it some compliments?
Mainly complaints. Yeah, mainly complaints. But again, you soon know if actually maybe you didn't get something spot on or actually if you left something out. And so, obviously, again, with social media now and the digital world, you can have lots of...
People can at Hugh BB and say that was terrible. In fact, they wouldn't use language as temperate as that, would they? Let's be honest.
You can have lots of friendly feedback from people. So I think we have a pretty good range of ways in which we can stay in touch with the audience. I've also always tried to be as audience facing with the programs I've been involved in as possible. And so we do a lot of focus groups and, you know, we do sessions with audience members where we show them programs and individual pieces and you quickly get a sense of whether you're hitting the mark or not.
And when things do go wrong, what does go wrong? What is the kind of thing that you're always on the lookout for during an average program that you put out?
I mean, the main danger is editorial mistakes and legal mistakes. And obviously we have pretty strict structures and processes in place to ensure that doesn't happen. And so that thankfully hasn't been a huge feature of the last 5 years. And then there's technical failure, which in a way is something obviously I can't control. And so famously last year, we couldn't get on air one evening at 10 o'clock because of a system
snafu.
And it took us 4 minutes. We didn't get on air till 4 minutes past 10. And
is that the YouTube clip of Hugh just sitting there?
Famously, yeah. Hugh was just sort of looking at his notes.
He mustn't have known he was on air then, otherwise he would have at least tried to
So he knew he was on air but not on air. And then when we did get on air, there was a breaking news bug that sort of had infiltrated the headlines. And so
time passed now that you can laugh at that, or are you still scarred emotionally from it?
It wasn't great, but we look back now and think, well, if you know these things are going to happen periodically, someone suggested that the whole 4.5 minutes should be entered for the Turner Prize, yes. I think it was, because it somehow symbolised and represented the sort of broken news. We'd had this extraordinary run of news and then the news blew up.
Yeah, and it was different on News Channel as well, though. There's two different ways to look at the horrendousness.
Yes, exactly. It was a sort of multi-platform experience.
I remember George Alagaya was presenting the 6 o'clock news once, and Christian Fraser did a kind of hour and a half live behind the scenes as it was happening. And that was an incredible insight into, you know, just how it was put together. And just it is literally done at breakneck speed, isn't it?
Yeah, we really enjoyed doing that. And it was, and again, we got really good feedback from people who are watching it and the audience. It's something actually we'd like to do for the 10 o'clock news, because you do then see the very real challenges and, you know, what goes on in the gallery. It's amazing how everything comes together at 6 o'clock, which is, you know, it's an incredibly busy day if you're editing the 6 o'clock news and putting that program out, and everything coming together and the director marshalling that gallery with 50 screens in front of them and 100 buttons to press.
I've been in that gallery many times. It's like something out of NASA.
And also that recognition, which again is a real TV and television news thing, which is every link in the chain is critical. And that's why it's folly to imagine that if you're the editor, you can make it all work or make it work. Everyone needs to do their job and get their bit right for it all to come together. And that's why it's a satisfying industry to work in, because it's a real team effort and it involves so many cogs in the chain.
You must get a sense of the huge responsibility, though, you know, being the editor of the BBC's flagship news channel. Does that ever kind of weigh heavily on your shoulders? Or do you just kind of get on with it?
Yeah, both things are true. First of all, it's a privilege. It's a huge privilege to do the job. Yes, it's a huge responsibility, and you think about it periodically, but if you thought about it the whole time, you wouldn't be able to function and operate if you thought about the audience and what the job entails. And so, you know, what I would say to the question is, I and sort of everyone in BBC News and everyone on my team, we all treat the job really, really seriously, and we all take an enormous amount of care over what we do, and we are all public service orientated journalists and broadcasters who are thinking about all the things that come with that in terms of impartiality and trust and delivering for audiences. The 10 o'clock news is one of the BBC's big rundowns of the news agenda on any given day. It's not necessarily the world or the news according to Paul Royal. It's what we, the BBC, feel are the stories and the issues and the subjects that the audience should be told about on any given day. And so we take huge care. We know we need to deliver authority. We know we need to deliver analysis, but we also know we need to deliver relevant, engaging news for the audience. You know, we're obviously helped enormously by this, by the talent and the people and the correspondents and the editors who are part of the programmes. And so, you know, if it's a big Westminster day, you've got Laura Kunzberg holding your hand through the story. If it's a big Donald Trump day, you've got John Sopel. If it's a big...
John's got the best job in journalism, hasn't he?
He could have
he
the
just
best.
Stands there and says, bugger me. I mean, he basically says that on Twitter, like, what on earth is going on?
He's got a brilliant job and he does it fantastically
he
well.
Does.
And
he does.
If it's a big Middle East day, you've got Jeremy Bowen. And so...
Brexit, you've got Katya Adler, who's a fantastic journalist.
And so... Yes, there's a responsibility. They're big programmes. But at the same time, we've got the people and we've got the attitudes and the public service awareness to deliver for the audiences.
Do you have to be mindful of the language that you use to kind of making politics or economics more accessible? Because it is a general public audience.
It is.
You can't be too technical. And yeah. You take an issue like Brexit, which, yes, there's the cut and thrust of the politics of the day and whether Boris Johnson's up or down or whatever. But it's also an incredibly technical subject, isn't it? I don't know what the balance of payments actually is. I could probably pretend I do, but I actually don't. But I need it explained to me in a way that isn't going to dumb it down, but also makes it accessible.
I think it's a really good question. It's a really important question. And again, I think... During this period, it's so relevant for news organisations and news broadcasters. As I said earlier, we're part of the peak time BBC One schedule. You've just been watching The Apprentice and the news comes on and you think, OK, I'm going to sit around and watch a bit of this stuff. And it's really contingent on us to explain those terms and try and make it clear. And we've done a lot of work over the last couple of years with younger audiences and looking at what younger audiences want out of the news. And one thing they want out of the news is sort of, you know, explaining terms and making it clear. But that's something we need to apply, and we try to apply, and hopefully we do apply, right across the piece, particularly when we're talking about stories like Brexit and complicated economic times as well.
Because I remember growing up watching the national news that they'd often used words that I didn't know what they meant and I have to look them up. And the exception for that was John Craven's News Round. They would actually explain what the national debt was or whatever. Yeah. I remember when Kim Jong-un famously called Donald Trump a dotard. That was the first time you'd ever explicitly said what it is. And I think it was Sophie Raworth that said, for those unaware of the term, dotard means, you know, a doddery old idiot, basically. But I think, because that is the challenge, isn't it, to make sure that the viewers can understand quite complicated subjects in 3 minutes.
And that is the art of a great news broadcaster, is being able to tell a complicated story in a engaging but also clear way that people can understand. And that's really, really hard. That's really hard. If you're saying, okay, explain the productivity puzzle to me in 2 minutes, it's really, really tough. Or explain what's going on in Syria in 2.5 minutes. But that's the job we do. That's the challenge. I hope we do it successfully most of the time. But I think, as I as said earlier, the times we live in, and with everything that's been going on, I think the onus is more and more on being clear with your terms.
One of the questions that I've always intrigued me about your job is, how do you literally decide the order of the news? You know, if 100 people are killed in country A and 50 people are killed in country B, which one is the most noteworthy, and do you prioritise domestic? How do you decide? Because clearly you have to start every day with a blank sheet of paper. Mm. You've then got 10 stories. You have to choose the running order. What is Hugh going to say when the bongs come on, like first?
We only do probably 8 or 9 stories on each bulletin. And they're not the same stories on each bulletin, so there's a bit of a spread in that respect. On any given day, there's going to be a self-selecting agenda. There are going to be 3 or 4 stories which, for better or worse, if you put 500 journalists in a room, would all say that's a story that should be in the daily news that day. And so, to a certain extent, that has been decided for you. And then we commission stories, which generally we feel are reflective of a big issue or a big problem or a big challenge that's going on at home or abroad, or a theme that is emerging. And so it gets in the programme because, in our judgment, it's a valid addition to the day's news. So, for example, a few weeks ago, we reported from Nicaragua, where there's quite a lot of political unrest and social unrest developing. And I don't remember, actually, over the past decade, us reporting from Nicaragua on the programmes. And so, for lots of different reasons, that's a valid story to put in the 10 o'clock news that evening. And then there's obviously what you might call the sort of the softer end of the news agenda, which could incorporate sport and arts and entertainment. And again, the audience wants that part of the news agenda as well. And so it may not be hard news that a sports person has retired, but talking to them, reflecting on their career, is something that the audience enjoys and expects, and is part of what we deliver as a news organisation.
How do you treat entertainment stories? Because sometimes they're clearly news. If someone in the Big Brother house swears or assaults someone, or you know, it's obviously news. But sometimes it might not necessarily be. I'm thinking of maybe a big movie launch, for example. Is there a pressure to have a kind of formula where you have light and shade, and you start with the more serious, hard hitting things, and then go to less harder hitting stories? Should we say?
I mean, like any news product, whether it's a news program, a newspaper, a website, you need a bit of texture in there, and you need a range. And again, it'll get in there on its merits. If it's going to be the biggest film of the year and tens of millions, hundreds of millions of pounds have gone into it, and we think it's an interesting, valid thing to be looking at, then we'll do it. And again, you just sort of judge it on its merits, but you definitely need texture in programs, because, as I say, these are part of the BBC One schedule, these programs. People want to watch something which is informative and engaging and tells them what's happened today, gives them a window on the world, but also allows them to enjoy reports about things that maybe they're watching or consuming as well.
Is your job as editor also to look at the competition, to look at other news programmes, you know, Tom on ITN, but also Sky and in other ways of news presentations around the world? How much is your job to keep your eyes and ears open to see what the competition are doing?
Absolutely. You're always looking around and what works and what doesn't work and who's doing things differently and what you like. At the same time, we've got a very successful formula. They're the two biggest TV news programmes in the country. They get big audiences, and the style and the way we deliver them is something which audiences buy into. So, of course, we want to keep evolving, and we watch the competition, and we have amazing competition in UK broadcast news, how strong it is. And so there's always things you're looking out for. But at the same time, we have an authoritative presentational anchoring style. We've got some very experienced senior correspondents and editors, and they and the presenters, but ultimately the content, are the stars of the show, in the sense that ultimately all of this is to deliver high impact, relevant content for audiences.
Do you ever feel that you're a bit put upon, though? Because the unique way the BBC is funded, of course, you get attacked from both sides, and particularly on issues like Brexit, where everyone seems to think that you're on the other person's side. But it seems to have increased these days with, you know, the march on Nick Robinson in Scotland and Laura Koonsberg having to have a bodyguard at last year's Labour Party conference. Andrew Adonis saying that the BBC is the Brexit Broadcasting Corporation. It seems that even politicians now seem to want to attack the BBC for you guys being biased. Now, I don't believe you're biased for a second, but how do you deal with that? Do you just get on with it and say, well, we're not biased and we're going to... Or is there a way that you're mindful of that?
I mean, first of all, as I was alluding to earlier, we've lived through a very busy 5 years of politics and social change and technological change. Yeah. And actually they all come together in a sense. So we've had elections, we've had referendums, and we've had binary choices, obviously, in these referendums, which means that passions run high and people have opinions. And the BBC, as the biggest news broadcaster, is the recipient of a lot of that. And in a way, it all comes together through a combination of what's happening politically, what's happening socially, and then what's happening technologically, in the sense that, as we talked about earlier, people can get in touch and make their feelings known and post things and say things and find a way of making their point known. Occasionally, the BBC will say something or put something out or write a piece to try and explain what we're doing. And again, it's sort of contingent on us to do that. But again, we have to be really, really confident that we are delivering impartial, authoritative public service journalism and news. We make judgments based on the experience of some of our best correspondents and editors. And I'm really, really confident that we've done a really, really strong and important job during that whole period. And so, of course, you take notice of it. Of course, occasionally you might think about it and worry about it a bit. But again, quite often when we've had to make our case, say after the referendum, we put together a little piece around the pieces we'd done before the referendum, just to try and explain to people that, yes, we had weighed up the economic case for and against Brexit, or we had weighed up for and against Brexit the business case. You know, I see the programmes, involving the programmes every day, and sometimes some of the criticism we're dealing with are to do with one particular thing on one given day, and they don't actually reflect the longitudinal coverage that we've done.
Will there be a 6 and 10 o'clock news 10 years from now?
That's a good question. I would say
probably
yes.
Not one you want to be asked.
I think there'll be a 6 and 10 o'clock news in 10 years' time. I think...
Will you still be editor?
Will I still be editor in 10 years? Well, yeah, good question.
You
I'll come back to
dig
you on
in
that.
On your desk and fight any oncomers who are going to try and take it from you.
Yeah, I've become the Alex Ferguson of news. I think there will be, but at the same time, the world is changing quickly and there may be more digital support around those programmes and they may find different guises as well. But in the end, I think what we're learning through everything that's happening is through a period of flux and technological change, a fixed, curated appointment to view for now, anyway, rundown of what's happening in the world, delivered by a news team that audiences trust and respect, there's probably a bigger place for that now than there ever has been, because there is so much that you have to contend with when you look around at what's going on.
Do you have to be extra careful when the BBC itself is the source of the news? Like, you're talking of the gender pay gap, BBC Women, all of the kind of, you know, there's been the Hutton Inquiry and all these kind of things recently. Sometimes, you know, maybe 2 out of 3 nights a year, the BBC itself is going to lead the story, given your unique place in society. Is that something that you have to proceed very carefully on, or do you just cover it like anything else?
You cover it like anything else, and you might sit there and think, well, he would say that, wouldn't he? But you know journalists, and if there's a story, there's a story, and journalists just set about covering the story. And if it's a BBC story, yeah, there may be 1 or 2 things which are obviously peculiar to that story, which you wouldn't get in a different type of story. But in the end, it's kind of business as usual.
Do you put a bid into Tony Hall's office to say, can we get the DG on? And then presumably he'll say yeah. He'll say no, won't he?
We put bids in, we ask for interviews, all the stuff you'd expect to do on any story.
I mean, I'm 43, I'm an old giffer, so of course I watch the BBC's 10 o'clock news. But do you feel a sense of a need to connect with younger audiences? We were talking earlier, just before we started the recording, about an initiative that you're working with BBC Three. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, like all news organisations, we're thinking about younger audiences, and there's a lot of work going on within the BBC which points in that direction. And we want younger audiences watching the 6 and 10 o'clock news. And in fact, the 10 o'clock news is the youngest TV bulletin in the BBC. But we need more of them. And obviously, we recognise that we have to go to where they are, as opposed to expecting them all the time to come to where we are. So we've been doing a bit of work with BBC Three to see whether we can come up with a news programme that can work for a sort of 18 to 34 audience. And it came out of a very, very simple sort of idea. I was having a conversation with one of our news trainees, and she said, there's nothing between Newsround and the 6 and 10. And it was so sort of blindingly obvious, it was so simple, that we thought, actually, well, why don't we try and make something which is between Newsround and the 6 and 10.
What's your personal journey here? Did you always want to be editor of the 10 o'clock news? Did you always want to be a journalist? How did you start out?
I never for a second really in my early career imagined I'd end up as editor of the 6 and the 10. And I remember when I got the job, and a friend of mine said, "You know, you're in charge of a national institution.
It's the top job. Congratulations."
Thank you.
5 years too late, but congratulations.
And I got into journalism really to do sports journalism, and so I started in newspapers, and my desire and interest was in sport, and then of course you do other things and you pick up other interests, and I started doing more news. And then famously, and I was half right here, but probably mainly wrong, in about 1994, I said to a colleague of mine in the local newspaper that I worked in that print was dead and I'm off to TV. That's where it's all happening. And this colleague went on ultimately to be editor of CNN.com. So I reflected on that. But anyway, I moved off into TV. And again, I never really expected to edit the 6 and 10, and initially in TV I was working in ITV, and I ended up at the BBC when the news channel started, because that was the future in terms of multi-skilled journalists, and it rolled from there.
Wasn't Tony Hall director of news at that point? Didn't he run the news channel?
He could well have been director of news at that point. So anyway, for anyone listening, there's a story of hope there, in the sense that there was no plan, there was no great ambition, there was no big scheme. And actually, as I said, I got into journalism to do sport.
And then, I mean, how long have you been at the BBC now?
I've been at the BBC 20 years.
A long time.
Yeah, but the BBC is vast, and you can still feel like a newbie 20 years on. There's still lots of parts of the BBC and lots of people you've never met or don't know exist. And the one thing within the BBC is there are so many different opportunities, and you can do and be what you want to be. And again, I know sometimes from the outside that can seem like it's not the case, but there are the opportunities there if that's what you want to do.
A lot of people listening to this podcast are aspiring journalists, they're student journalists, they're listening because, frankly, they'll want your job 10, 15, 20 years from now. What advice would you give them in terms of do's and don'ts?
Be curious about things. Treat all stories and people you meet and things you do as good, positive experience. You know, I started in local newspapers doing what, looking back now, would feel like pretty micro, inconsequential stories, but that's all part of who I am and the journalist I am. Don't feel there's some sort of set formula, which means that you have to follow to get to a job like this. The BBC is changing a lot. There's lots of opportunities. There's lots of ways of getting into good, interesting jobs. But keep the journalistic curiosity going. I think in a way that's the most important thing. And in my particular, there is a particular skill set around television news. You've got to be able to work with people. You've got to be able to work with a vast range of people. You've got to be prepared to go through those logistical challenges to get news on air. And so, yes, it's about being a strong editorial figure and thinker and having ideas and creative ideas, but you've also got to have a skill set which goes beyond that. You're not a one-man band, and particularly within BBC News, you're part of quite a big team.
Paul, it's been a hugely enjoyable conversation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
A Right Angles podcast in association with Big Things Media.